The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the Upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you, Alanda, for helping lead us to behold what is true about God in song and in confession. It's a joy to gather with you and to do those things together, whether it's singing, whether it's reciting scripture, whether it's confessing what is true about us, and then ultimately what is true about the Lord. And now the great privilege of opening up God's Word together, regardless of what you bring into the room, life, circumstance, emotion, whatever the case may be, the greatest thing we can do is immerse ourselves in God's story. The true and ultimate story. And so that's what we're going to do for the next few moments together. And I want to invite you, if you have a copy of God's Word, to go with me to Exodus 19. Exodus 19. And I want you, in light of this idea about the true and ultimate story, I want you to think for a moment about your story. I want you to think about who you are, where you came from, what you've been through. I just allow that to kind of sit at the forefront of your mind for a moment. What you've experienced, what you've endured. I want you to think about where you are. Yes, that includes what you feel. It includes what you're thinking. The season in which you find yourself in. And perhaps even the one that you're hoping, like a future movement of where you hope God's taking you. You see, the truth is, whether or not we realize it, our stories sit underneath every single decision that we make. Everyone. From the way that we view ourselves, to the way that we view the world, to the way we relate to others, to our outlook on life, to the things that we give our attention and affection to, we can trace it all back to our story. We all live and we all die by the stories that we tell ourselves. In Exodus 19, we are reintroduced to a group of people who have lost sight of who they are. They've lost sight of their story. They have recently been rescued from hundreds of years of bondage in Egypt, over 400 years. And as you can imagine, they've suffered physical, emotional, and psychological trauma. They've been indoctrinated into the false stories of worship in Egypt. In Exodus 19, the people of God are a wounded people. They are afraid, they are confused, and they have a host of questions that do not come with easy answers. I think it's safe to say that they are a desperate people, and it's here, amid the fear and confusion, amid the myriad of emotions that they must have felt, that Yahweh, the one true God, descends upon Mount Sinai. And in this mysterious interaction between Yahweh and Moses, God does something remarkable. You know what he does? He restores his people. He restores them. For every distorted attack against the nature and character of God, in this moment, on this mountain, in the journey that he is taking them towards, he is going to reveal the fullness of his character to his people. And you know what that fullness is? He's never changing, always pursuing, full of mercy and full of grace. That's who he is. For every lie and stronghold that has painted the way that they view themselves and the world, God on this mountain reveals what is ultimately true about their identity and the world that belongs to Him. For every painful and oppressive ideology that has shaped their way of life, God on this mountain is going to reveal a new pathway to freedom. That's what God's doing when we, at the beginning of this service, we confess the Ten Commandments. What is God doing here on this mountain, in this sacred space? He's going to restore His people. I want to look at one portion of 19 because we're really going to be in chapter 20 today, but I want you to look at verse 4 of Exodus 19 to remind you of the context by which God is getting ready to introduce these 10 words or 10 sayings to His people. Exodus 19, verse 4. "You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I came to you and I bore you on eagle's wings and I brought you," not just to a place. I didn't just bring you to the place that I had purposed from the beginning, but I brought you to myself. Brought you to myself. "Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel." Now turn over to chapter 20, and then let's pick up and read the first two verses here in this chapter. "And God spoke all these words, saying, I am Yahweh, I am the Lord your God." And He reminds them again, what did He do? "I came to you. I initiated you. I heard your cry. I saw your brokenness. I saw what you were walking through. I came to you and I brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. That's what I did for you. I initiated, I rescued, I delivered, I carried you" where? "To myself." You see, God is restoring a people who have lost sight, perspective, and hope of their story. And the foundation of God's restored grace is His unchanging character. His rescuing grace is anchored in His unfailing goodness and holiness. That He is singular in who He is. He is unshifting. He is never inconsistent. He is the very essence of all that is good. And it's this God who initiates. It is this God who rescues. It is this God who redefines. It is this God who is altogether distinct from His people, that He brings them to Himself. And here's what He declares about them. And this is why I read Exodus 19 to you again this morning. He brings them to Himself and declares, "Because you are with me, you are distinct also." And listen, this is before He ever utters a word about what that actually looks like. "You are mine. You are a peculiar people. You are a kingdom of priests and a holy distinct nation." This is the perspective, even on this side of the cross and the resurrection and the ascension of Jesus as New Testament people, this is the perspective that should inform how we hear and understand God's heart for His people. So before I read the rest of chapter 20 to you and with you, I don't want you to forget God's heart towards His people. Like, what's consuming their minds as God utters these 10 words? Here's what's consuming their mind. "You are my beloved," He says. "I want absolutely no distance from you. I brought you to myself, and I'm carrying you all the way home." That is shocking. And I assure you that in their ears, to their minds and hearts, that's more shocking than the 10 things he's about to tell them. So in light of that, let's read the rest of Exodus 20 together. Verse 3, the 10 words, the 10 sayings. The reason why I say the 10 words, the 10 sayings, because in the original language, this isn't the 10 commandments that he is conveying. This is the 10 words of instruction that God, Yahweh, is given to his people that reveals something about who he is, therefore who they are as his distinct people. Verse 3, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, I am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. Verse 7, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God, and on it you shall not do any work. You, your son, your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God has given you. You shall not murder, shall not commit adultery, shall not steal, shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that is your neighbor's. These words are countering, please hear me, these words are countering all the ways that they have been subjected to bondage, slavery, and oppression at the hands of a wicked king and a wicked tyrant named Pharaoh. Pharaoh represents the work of Satan. Egypt represents a world turned in on itself and therefore against Yahweh, the one true God. And here God is on this mountain, acknowledging that for decades his people was subjected to both a tyrant leader and a world that had no humility or awareness or reverence towards the one true God. So these 10 words are countering the ways in which they have been deformed by the work of Satan. And now God's going to restore his people in light of who he is and their relationship to him. And I just want to walk through them briefly, okay? We did a teaching series on this. Oh man, it's probably five, six years ago. And we walked very specifically and in detail through each commandment. So I'd encourage you to go back, find that on our podcast. But I'm going to, in a summary, show you how God's restoring his people in light of his character. Number one, the first word. In Egypt, many, many false gods were worshipped. Pharaoh being the pinnacle of their allegiance. And God's people were indoctrinated into the worship of not just one God, but many gods. While not one of them, whether it be the sun god or the harvest god or the god of the sea, the god of the Nile, or Pharaoh himself, while not one of them having the power or the authority to claim worship from anyone. But what God's doing right here in this moment, he's restoring his people and he's telling them, there's only one God. There's only one. Many may be worshipped, but there's only one. I am who I am. There is no God but him. And he wants his people to know, if you want to know what a life of flourishing looks like, it is giving your allegiance, affection, and worship to Yahweh and Yahweh alone. That's the emphasis of no other gods before me. Words 2 and 3. In Egypt, the people cried out to Pharaoh and the host of false gods to serve their purposes. That's why they would cry out. They had no desire to worship the gods for who the gods were. They were worshiping the gods for what they thought the gods could provide for them. And so they cried out to them to get what they wanted. And God here at Mount Sinai, through Moses, this mysterious interaction is conveying his way of life. And here's what he's going to say. No image, no authority can be placed upon God for personal gain. Can't do that. You can't use my name or some perceived image of me in order to get what you want. You can't manipulate God. You can't pray the right prayer or have the right pithy statement to turn God according to your will and your desire. And he says this compulsion, the implication of this compulsion is to make God serve us. That was the way of Egypt. That, man, we'll do what the gods want and we'll cry out to the gods just so that we might get what we want. God is saying, if you want freedom and a life of flourishing, it's actually the opposite. Freedom and flourishing is found in bowing our knee in awe and humble gratitude before God and God alone. Number 4, the fourth word, the fourth saying, in Egypt, consumption was the highest good, no matter the cost. And the vulnerable in Egypt were viewed as nothing more than commodities for selfish gain. They work the people. As you navigate and trace the first 18 chapters of Exodus, you see that the people of God, even the people in Egypt, were worked literally to the brink of death with no regard for their humanity. And it was this idea that we're going to work them to just produce, mass produce. Oh, by the way, just for a moment. Does that sound a whole lot like the society in which you and I live in today? Not only is consumption the highest form of good, but produce, 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 work, 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 enjoy, 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 at what cost? No matter the cost. No matter the cost. God is reminding his people here. He's restoring his people. And here's what he's telling them. You want to know what true freedom is? True freedom is embracing your limitations. True freedom is embracing boundaries. And that freedom in Yahweh, that freedom in the way of God, it is available to everyone, especially the weak and the vulnerable. He says, if you give your allegiance to me as the one true God, and you submit your life to me as the one true God, you will enter into rest. Not just spiritually, but mentally, emotionally, and physically. And I love the detail by which God tells him, hey, I want even your animals to take a break. All the way down to your every element of your life, I want you to trust this. I've got you. That my providence never wasted on you. I know exactly what you need. And if you'll submit your life to me and rest, I'll take care of you. I'll provide for your every need. I want to think about the fifth and the seventh saying or word together. In Egypt, families were not only disregarded, but they were torn apart. And we see the evil that happens in Egypt. Covenant was disregarded. Authority was disregarded. And the impulse of desire in Egypt was get what you want. Take whatever you desire. And God says, not so among you. Not so among my people. The authority structures that God's put in place is for your good. So honor that structure. Honor that authority. Children, honor your parents. And when it comes to your marriage, understand it's sacred. Care for it. Fight for it. Protect it. Be devoted to it. Are you guys picking up on the trend here of how God is restoring his people? God's heart, God's character is being revealed. In what way? In how his people live. That if we trust Yahweh, if we belong to Yahweh, if Yahweh has indeed come and rescued us, delivered us, brought us to himself, that we now bear the distinctive holiness by which Yahweh defines himself. And that gets expressed and lived out by the way in which we live and speak and interact and communicate with one another. The sixth word, in Egypt, there's no regard for the sanctity of human life. The life of the weak and vulnerable are completely disregarded. And God is telling his people here, every individual created in my image, is worthy of your respect and dignity. And then the eighth and tenth word, we'll put them together. In Egypt, greed is the baseline motivation for how people relate to one another. The powerful, what do? They take what they want. What does that sound like? Do you think Egypt sounds much different than the culture in which you and I live in today? No. The powerful, what do? They prey on the weak. They exploit, and they often exploit for financial gain. And right here, God's saying, everything that I placed into your hands, you know what? It's a gift. And what I've placed into your hands is enough. And if you'll live your life this way, it'll shift your perspective towards not only others, but what God's also placed into other people's hands. That in the kingdom of this world, the powerful, they overwhelm the weak, but in the kingdom of God, the powerful become servants to all. And then lastly, the ninth word, in Egypt, there's no basis for integrity. There's no basis for truth. The weak had no protection. So no standard of truth. Bearing false witness was always, almost always justifiable, especially if you were not in the category of the weak and the vulnerable. You had a justification. You had a means to bend, slant, change, alter truth. And what God's telling Moses here is he's saying, I am the God who is holy, consistent, unchanging, unmixed. I am the very standard of truth. I am your God and you are my people. Therefore, you are people of truth. And a life of flourishing, a life of freedom looks like a people who protect the truth, who bear witness to the truth, and who walk in the truth. They are people who protect it, who bear witness to it, and who walk in it. This is how God is restoring his people. Do you see that? As we immerse ourselves in the story of God up to this point, these 10 words are bringing his people out of indoctrination, out of pagan idolatry, out of woundedness and trauma, and going, you're mine. And because you're mine, this is who I am. And this is how you live. God's instruction in Exodus 20 is the perfect blueprint for human flourishing. Let's not get that twisted. It's the perfect blueprint. But it also reveals a significant problem. You know what that problem is? The people of Israel. That problem, if God is saying, live this way, and it's the perfect blueprint for how we would live and how we would experience freedom, and especially how we would relate, not only to one another, but to the world. And why is it we have a hard time living according to that design? You see, the problem is us. The problem is we can't keep God's instruction. Israel couldn't keep it, nor can we. Can I give you a little bit of Old Testament history all the way up into Jesus? I promise you I'll be brief here because we're going somewhere. Right after God gives these instructions, do you know what Israel does? Israel rejoices and has this worship service and says, "We love your words. Yes, we love them. We're going to follow them. We're going to walk in them. They're the greatest. This is freedom. This is a good pathway to life and flourishing." But do you know how long it takes for them to break the first and the second commandment? Well, in our English Bibles, just a few chapters. Just a few chapters for them to break one and two. And you know what Moses does? This goes from Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy through the rest of the Torah. He gives instruction. He gives more instruction. You know what they do? They rebel. And he gives them more instruction. You know what they do? They rebel. More instruction, rebel. More instruction, rebel. More instruction, rebel. No matter what Moses says, as God's spokesman, God's people go, yep. But they don't actually walk according to that design. And when we get to the book of Deuteronomy, Moses looks at his people, he looks at God's people, and he tells them why they cannot keep God's command. This is what he says. He says, "Your hearts are hard." And he says, "You won't follow God's instruction until you have a transformed heart." So if we keep tracing the story, if we go past the first five books of the Old Testament, God's people, they enter into the promised land. And you know what they're doing when they enter into the promised land? They're ignoring and doing opposite of God's 10 sayings, God's instruction. They're doing opposite. They're living in rebellion to God's design. And by the time we arrive to the prophets, they're reflecting back on Israel's history. And here's what their take is on Israel's disobedience. Ezekiel says this. He says, if Israel is going to obey God, the Spirit of God must transform their hearts, taking their heart of stone and turning it into a heart of flesh, meaning they've got to be receptive and open to God. And the only way that you can be receptive and open to God is to have your heart of stone turn into a heart of flesh. That's Ezekiel. Jeremiah says the only way that obedience to God's instruction would not feel like a duty is to have that law written on our hearts. That when it changes from duty to delight, as David often says, I desire it like honey. It is sweet to the taste. What would be true in that moment for that desire to be true? The heart would have to be transformed. And then we get to Isaiah. Isaiah takes it a step further, and he predicts that into the future, Isaiah says that a leader is going to come. And he calls him Israel's Messiah. And he says, this future leader is going to come and lead the people in perfect obedience to God's instruction. So by the time we turn the page from that Old Testament prophet Malachi and we get to the New Testament, Jesus comes on the scene. Jesus clarifies what it means that he is the fulfillment of God's law. That Jesus didn't come to abolish it, but he came to fulfill it. And this is what he says. Jesus himself says the demand of the law can be summarized like this. Love God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength, right? And then to love others. And if you look at the 10 words, the first four words are all in reference to this vertical relationship, our love for God, and the other six are representative of our relationship, our love to others. And then Jesus takes it a step further in exposing the hearts of humanity and what it means to follow God's good design. He takes God's 10 words and he uses them to expose the heart of humanity. He says, you have heard it said, do not murder. But I tell you, anyone who has hatred in his heart towards someone is guilty of breaking God's instruction. You know what Jesus is doing? Well, he's fulfilling what the prophet said all along. He's exposing our hearts that in and of themselves, they are incapable of following God's good and perfect design. And here's the good news of the gospel. Where Israel failed, Jesus does not. Jesus does not. Jesus is the fulfillment of the law that Israel could not keep, nor could we keep. He fully loved God and others. In fact, Jesus loved his enemies, even unto death. And as a result of the death, the resurrection, the ascension of Jesus, he sends his Spirit into the hearts of humanity to transform us from the inside out, giving us a heart of flesh, giving us a heart that now longs to love God and to love others. And you know how he would accomplish this? By writing his perfect law on our hearts. That what once was a duty, now is a delight. Because it's written on our hearts by faith. What once was impossible is now made possible. Because it's been written on our hearts by faith. And the Spirit of the living God that dwells within us. Do you know what the Spirit of God does? Compels, motivates, and produces love for God and love for others. You know what? What does that actually look like? I mean, we've just covered the ten sayings really quickly, summarization. And we just traced it really, really quickly from the ten sayings all the way to the life of Jesus and his fulfillment of these very words. What does this look like? The law written on our hearts is the moment by moment pursuit of the abiding presence of God. Let me say that again. The law written on your heart. How do I know if God indeed has changed my heart, has taken a heart of stone, given me a heart of flesh? Well, it is the moment by moment desire, pursuit of the abiding presence of God. The law written on our hearts is the abiding presence of the Spirit producing within us what? Love for God. Folks, listen, if you belong to Jesus this morning by faith, the Spirit of the living God dwells within you, and his number one responsibility is to produce desire in you, longing within you to love, to be with, and to enjoy God. That's his role. And we cooperate with that. And we lean into that. And his role, as we love God, it produces love for one another. Deference and compassion and mercy. The way we love and treat others, not just people that look like us. Not just people that agree with us. But even our very enemies. We would love the way that he loves because it is his Spirit within us producing every ounce of love for God and love for one another. Don't get it twisted. There's not a God of the old and a God of the new that are distinct. It is the same God working his redemptive plan all the way in and through the person of Jesus Christ. And this is how God continues to restore his people for those of us that belong to him. This is what God is up to in your life. Even today, I don't know all your stories, and I don't know all that you're walking through. I don't know exactly what this season of life looks like for you, but here's what I do know. I do know that God is desiring to restore you in light of his good and faithful character and his promises and his purpose. I do know that that's what God is up to. We're all in process, but even now, in our weakness, even now in our limitations, even now in our circumstances, God is pursuing us to restore our minds and our hearts after his good design. I'm going to invite Doug and Alonda back, and we're going to respond to this restoring grace by coming to the Lord's table. by taking of the elements this morning. And I think because a lot of our, because a lot of the history that many of us experience when it comes to life in the church, there's such a jaded view on everything we just talked about, the law, God's Ten Commandments, life of obedience, walking in holiness. But from God's point of view, His instruction is good. It's a good thing. And you want to know one of the reasons why it's good? It's good because it exposes our need for Jesus. So if I were to, we could do an exercise this morning, and here's the reason we're not going to do it, because I already know the answer. We could do an exercise and have everyone stand up this morning and go, okay, how many of you have been guilty this past week of breaking commandment number one, or the first word? And we could just go down the list. And here's what I know would be true. We all would be sitting at the end of the 10. You go, well, I hadn't murdered anybody, you know? Or I haven't done this or that. And then we go to the person of Jesus, who takes that extreme and says, well, have you had bitterness towards anybody? Have you had resentment towards anybody? James even says, if you're guilty of one, you're guilty of all. See, one of the beautiful things about God's perfect design is that if we'll look honestly into it, it'll expose our need. Our need for a gracious, loving advocate. His name is Jesus. His name is Jesus. So let me invite you to stand, and we're also going to do a call and response. We're going to do a confession together before I invite you to receive the elements. And so on the screen in just a moment, just like Alonda did, I'm going to read a portion, and then you're going to read a portion. And we're going to confess on the front end, before we take of the elements, the ways in which we fall short of God's good design. Because confession's good. It's good. So as we confess this together, at the end of that, I'm going to invite you to come and receive the elements. So you'll grab the elements and take them back to your seat. And then we're going to keep singing. We're going to sing a couple songs together, and then I'm going to come back up and lead us through the bread and the cup together. Okay? All right, let's join in together on this confession. Our sins are many, but thank God for His forgiveness and grace. This is where we'll begin. You commanded that we not have any God besides You. Yet we give our praise to so many others. You commanded that we not make our own images to worship, but our hearts are idol factories. You commanded that we not take Your name in vain, yet our mouths dishonor You. You commanded that we remember the Sabbath, yet striving to consume and provide for ourselves, we forget. You commanded that we honor our father and mother, but our families are fractured and in conflict. You commanded that we not murder. Still, our communities are filled with violence, vengeance, and death. You commanded that we not commit adultery, but our desires undo our promises, and we indulge ourselves over our covenants. You commanded that we not steal. Yet our hands and minds have taken from others, forgetting that all belongs to You. You commanded that we not lie, but we obscure truth to suit our own outcomes and advantages. And You commanded that we not envy. Still, our contentment is ruined by comparison to others. Let's now move to receive the elements, and then you can return to your seat.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.